Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome everyone to the Spotlight Interview Series. I'm Jeremy Lambert, joined as always by Steven Jensen. And with us today, competing this Sunday in Tampa, Florida against Impact superstar Josh Alexander, we have Carl Fredericks on the show. Carl, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. I probably should have called Josh an Impact wrestler. There's only one company that does superstars from what I've been told, so apologies to, to Josh. Carl, how are you feeling about this? What's that?
I don't know the rules with all that.
So. People will get mad at me about it.
I'm just
a
wrestler, you know?
So, are you a wrestler, a sports entertainer, a superstar? What do you identify as, Carl?
I'm a rock star, man. That's what I am.
Rock star. I like it. I like that.
I've been told by Mike Goldberg it takes a lot of energy to be a rock star. That is a Ronda Rousey reference, the night she lost to Holly Holm. Carl, you got Josh Alexander this Sunday in Tampa. I mean, you've shared the ring with a lot of big names. You're coming off a match against Christopher Daniels, in fact. How you feeling about going against Alexander this Sunday?
Man, there's just kind of a lot to it. A lot on the line for me a little bit, because these are – just like with the Christopher Daniels match, the opportunities that I need, and I've been very hungry for, because he is that, compared to, let's say, this last year on Strong, very successful year for me. It was a good campaign, but I was lacking these big opportunities, these big matches. So same thing with the Christopher Daniels match. It was great. You know, I'm very proud of it, but end of the day, I didn't get that win. So, being hungry for these opportunities, you also got to go out and seize them. So Josh being undefeated in New Japan, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, on Strong, I believe, former X Division champion, the year he's had, and it's an opportunity to go make a statement, no different than Christopher Daniels. You know, I think a lot of people probably didn't even know who I was, or people that, you know, were familiar, but that was a match that they wanted to go check out, and they saw, you know, a taste of what I'm capable of. And if I can go out and pull off a win here against Josh, then it's going to be huge for me. And that's something that I really need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. For the fans here at Fightful, just a little background on you. We're talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling, obviously. I've heard you in the past refer to the LA Dojo as basically like your team. It's like a fight team. You treat it like a sport. What was it like training under Shibata? Because like, I'm such a big fan of his, and like, I can only imagine how difficult it was to train under him, but like how rewarding it must be to like kind of like graduate through that and be where you're at now.
Man, it was all of the good, the absolute best hard things that you can imagine. You know, the reason you're asking this question, it was an honor. It's been an honor, and luckily that's still, you know, like, he's like our dad. So that's someone that's always looking to improve us in our own specific ways. But goddamn, was it hard, you know? And then a lot of it too was just going back down to the basics of pro wrestling, and then doing jiu-jitsu for the first time. and then kickboxing, and then back to natural wrestling, like, you know, in ways that I haven't since I was in like middle school. And the first several months were just that stuff. So I think the rewarding stuff came obviously through the pain and like the physical condition, because we got to a point, and I'm not there right now, I'll tell you that. I did not stay in this shit, but it got to a point where, you know, 500, 700 squats, things like that, kids would come in for the camps. And, you know, Alex Clark and I would run the camps, and we would do what we thought were easy workouts, you know, and we'd have kid. One kid got rhabdo at a seminar, was pissing blood for like a week just from lactic acid building his quads.
Wow.
Someone always pukes, someone always quits. And I'm not, you know, nothing, especially I will say this, every kid that's puked in the dojo, we have a puke bucket after the first first camp. We didn't have a puke bucket. I think Shibata-san called it puke box, a little trash can. The first time somebody missed, but he cleaned it up himself and then went right back to the workout. And then everyone else has puked successfully in the box, the puke box. And then they'd come back and finish the camp. But we were at a point where just these fucking ridiculous workout, like something that you would have to pay me. Like if you wanted me to go do one of those workouts today, like you're slipping me $100 minimum, like minimum, yeah, just for me to try. But that was like normal. You know, so we'd be for that time period, and trust me, man, like just I think of it now and it kind of gives me a little bit of anxiety, but like just the amount of focus. And like when I, you know, you said you listened to the interview I did with Shining Wizards, and I mentioned, I've done it a couple of times, I mentioned I used to be much more full of piss and vinegar, you know, and that, but that came from, I was waking up every day and beating the shit out of my roommates, getting the shit beat out of me by my roommates. We're doing these crazy workouts where, you know, we're coming home afterwards, we're watching film with Shibata-san, as old as it gets, and then we're watching the current Young Lions, and we're sitting there, and it's like we're in the film room, you know, like on a football team and no different, you know, we're watching film, and we're getting that feel from him, like, so like this is your competition, like before we went to that first G1, you know, it was like we're going to go to Japan, you guys are going to fight these fucking boys, and you're going to beat these boys. And that was that whole thing, you know, it was like we were well-oiled machines. Probably a bit of the human side up here was turned off for, for a bit. It's on now. But yeah, man, it was like, it was cool though, because during that time, especially as a young lion, you know, because of like the restrictions you have on like your real life, you know, you're locked into that mode. So it was, you either, you know, you give in and go with the flow of that fucking, that rapid, or, you know, I mean, you can try and fight it and cling on to whatever, but like the cool, cling on to whatever bits of like your, you know, yourself or your personal stuff you want to cling on to. But, you know, for the three of us, we bought into Shibataism. We bought into New Japan Pro Wrestling, bought into everything that was taught to us, and we've run with it.
What's going through your mind when he first makes the surprise appearance against Zack Sabre, and then, you know, has the wrestling match? Like, you're watching your mentor, and many people, I think himself included, are like, he's never going to wrestle again. And you see him do this appearance, and then you see him do this match, and he says before the match, like, I'm going to take a bump. Like, you're not holding me back on this. Like, watching that from, one, your perspective as a fan, and two, your perspective as like his young lion, like what's going through your mind when you see that?
Man, both times. The first time, I remember the Zack Sabre, the exhibition, because we didn't know about any of them, of course. You know, that guy that everyone idolizes, that wrestler, that, you know, that quiet, was it like, that's him. Like, dude, like he just does what he wants, you know. But it was really cool waking up. One of the rare occasions that you wake up and see a bunch of notifications on Twitter and things, and they're good. So that was nice. And so then it was like see everything that's going on, because usually I'll catch up, you know, right? Like things will air at like 3:00 a.m. here or whatever. I like to go to the gym in the morning, so I'll, you know, 6 or 7 is when I'll get up, and then I'll watch the shows from the night before, a couple hours afterwards. But it was exciting, man. So of course, went straight to my line app and, you know, text him congratulations and everything. And then the Wrestle Kingdom match. And again, same thing, because it was with Rent, you know, and that's someone, he's in the dojo. He's one of us. And watching that, the people's reactions, his reactions afterwards, and just, you know, because the match was fucking great. Match was awesome. So it was plenty of moments where I think where it would normally be like you get that exciting, like kind of chill down your spine when a cool spot or move, you know, something cool happens and you get that as a fan, that excitement, you react to it. Like for me, everything was kind of like just rushes of like maybe little bits of tear, you know, like the warm in my cheeks, like I wanted to tear up a little bit, you know, but it was all just good. Like it's probably one of the few times I've watched an entire wrestling match just with like a smile on my face, you know, and I was just in my living room, you know, 7 a.m. quiet by myself, just grinning ear to ear. So it was cool, man. It was special. And it was, you know, coming from meeting him in 2018, thinking, you know, something like that was way out of the realm of possibility at the time. And now, you know, it's happened. I have no idea what his plans are moving forward, but I'm sure it'll be just no different than now, that his plans are going to be what he wants, whatever he wants. And he's, you know, he's going to do what he wants and what he can do safely. So it was special, man. And I think it was also, again, like with, you know, everything going, half the roster stuck over here because of visas and things like that. And, you know, we're still waiting to get that full New Japan, you know, everything that we have, all the big gun, every gun that we have in the arsenal, and put it out, you know, put our best foot forward like all the other companies are able to do. I think it was something that was really big and added a ton of value to Wrestle Kingdom, obviously, you know.
Yeah,
so it was awesome for him, you know, for him to not only do that, you know, because injury and everything, but then just here's a guy that's still stepping up for the fucking company, you know. Like I think maybe people miss that part of it a lot too. So here's a guy risking, you know, his health, you know, not the most ideal situation, but that was huge for the company. That was huge for the weekend. So yeah, props to Boss Man. He's a man.
yeah, I know you just mentioned that, you know, a few years back it seemed like out of the realm of possibility given, you know, the injury and all that stuff. Did you have any kind of inklings or hints or anything of like seeing him as often as you did? Like did you were there moments where you're like, oh man, this guy's gonna get back in the ring? Like I know it seems like a long shot, but like he really wants to get back in there.
I know he was dying to like our normal day. Like he's not a standby coach, you know. The only time he's standing while we're doing drills is if he's got the one of those nice whistles with the button, you know. he's got a few because he's broken a few of them, throwing them across the dojo and chewing our asses. But now it's funny because he has the one broken one and it's got like the weakest little like tweet whistle. And it's funny to all of us, him including, because like we remember the day he broke it. Like that was like the first real fucking time he came down. it was a rough.
What happened? Can you tell us what happened there? Like,
It was a combination. It was very, very early in the dojo, you know, and, you know, we don't know like the cultural, the do's and don'ts, essentially, you know, whether it be as young lions, you know, are, you know, just like the greedy, it's just like the Japanese way. And because things are very militant, you know, the system, my guess is it's no different than like the way we do. Well, a little different because like, we understand, you know, Clark and I especially, you know, like I get the military. My dad was a police officer, I have a criminal justice degree. Like I get, you know, I played a lot of sports where this is the way the coaches are just, and I had great coaches, and you can't, because of that, like Shibata was never, other than being afraid of workouts, you know, because they're hard, but like, you know, you can't come down on me hard enough as a coach to upset me, you know, you can't, like that's just good coaching. In my eyes, you know, I get it, but I think it was just like an issue of instead of just telling us, we want you to, you know, this is how you walk, this is how you talk, these things, it was like, like we had made we had made all the mistakes first, not knowing, and then as soon as they laid the rule, you know, as soon as we knew the spiel, once you got the spiel, one, we, you know, we made sure never to, you know, make ourselves go through a day like that again. But then, yeah, it was, you know, as simple as like, hey, this is how it's going to be. And and from there on out, you know, but where we go before
sorry. Like any hints that he might be actually returning.
Yeah. Every day, man, he, you know, he blow the whistle for us to start our warm up. And then he's running around the dojo, shadow boxing, warming up, stretching, doing his own warm up. And then by the time we're in the ring doing our stretch, he's stretching with us. And then like with the workouts, he's either, he'll do a lot of them to show us, or some days like, you know, if we have a few hundred squats, he'll jump in and do the first few hundred with us and then walk away and no sell it, you know, to like, let us know. Like, it's like, yeah, that's why I'm like, you know, he's in charge for a reason and he's not. And it was also like, to get in there and like push us through. Cause he would do that. Like when you're tired, you know, if you're tired, he gets down and he's doing the pushups with you. Or I remember like my first camp dying, we're doing sets of like 100 lion pushups and regular, just crazy thing, you know? And he's like, I'm on the ground doing pushups and he's standing over me, just pulling me up, giving me a spot. So I finish every rep, you know, like he was that kind of coach. And then go through his own full workout in the weight room after we're done. But yeah, like you see anytime there's like free ring, you know, he's hitting the ropes. And then the wrestling, all the wrestling, everything he taught us, it was hands-on. And it was hands-on in the way, like whether it be the submissions with jujitsu or just takedowns, things like that. Like he'll show you the technique a little, you go through it, and then he'll fucking take you down. Or if we're doing jujitsu, he'll tap you out to show you what the, you know, this is the pain. This is the real shit. So he never stopped moving and staying. He's been in ring shape, I would say, aside from, you know, you can't be in full ring shape without, you know, you can only do that through practice. But I mean, he was in the ring moving around training every day since I've known him. And then I've been out of the dojo, out of LA since December of 2020. So all of 2021, all the stuff that they were doing, you know, so I had heard days here and there reports from the boys like, oh, Boss Man was a little froggy in training today. And like that. But it was always like they were few and far between, though, it seemed, you know. So like, again, both of those events, like I had no idea. And you just see the announcement, and like the first one with Zach, complete surprise. And when the announcement for the second one came, it was like, of course, you know, it was still a surprise to see, but it was like, fuck yeah, you know.
You've been part of New Japan Strong since really, really the beginning when you guys were running and during the pandemic and everything. What's been your take on the evolution of the show, starting from you know, when you guys were wrestling in front of nobody, and then now you're going to different venues, you're bringing in people like Jon Moxley is there now. Like, what's been your take on the evolution of the show?
Man, it's been such a pleasure and an honor to be a part of it from the get-go. Cause I mean, even the first attempts at filming out of the Ocean View Pavilion where we used to, where our empty arena was, we did Lions Break Collision, I believe was the name of it. Yeah. So we did. And that was like that first episode that was my first main event was that, you know, I believe it was like that tag match with Cobb and Rocky against Clark and I, and it was in my new gear. And then the next show was Cobb and I in a main event. So going from like that, those first episodes where it was literally the three LA Dojo boys, and then DKC was on those shows. DKC is actually the first person that I ever beat with my Manifest Destiny. But we had like these newer guys, you know, these indie guys that we thought were like, Dylan had been in and out of the dojo a handful of times, camps and stuff, you know? So it was like, just like the LA Dojo, and you know, whatever New Japan could get, like, hey, let's make the show, let's do this, let's get a product out. And then that, it was kind of like the dipping our toes in the water to what would become Strong. And then when we first started Strong, it was the same thing. It was like the LA Dojo boys, that, you know, the West Coast indie guys, and a lot of them were all friends of mine. So that's been really cool too, is, you know, finally getting to travel with guys like Adrian Quest. Like, that's like, I've known him for a handful of years since my days on the indies. And I fucking love that kid. And he's one of the best super juniors in the world, if you ask me. So seeing my friends get opportunities, and then the show, it started like with that. And then eventually we get guys like Kenta, G.O.D. over, you know, and then I missed that. That was summertime. And then by the fall, Moxley came in for the first time, and we started to get more guys like that, you know, and it was still empty arena. But then, you know, a year later, August, and I'm match one, you know, there's a few thousand people, I'm outside the Coliseum, you know, huge, you know, I don't like the Trojans, but I'm a huge college football fan. So, you know, that we go from that to back to touring, and, you know, we're hitting different cities, and we got a ton of exciting stuff. The cast is, you know, the whole locker room has doubled, and we're doing nothing but exciting stuff in my eyes. And it's fucking cool, man, because I really believe that we're a completely separate brand at this point, you know, from the main roster. And that's also because we're kind of exclusive mutual on both sides, with a few senpai we've had run over. But soon enough, whenever everybody gets visas and things are fully back open, like I think it's going to be cool, because we're going to be able to take advantage of every bit of the roster. Like I said, use our full arsenal. So that maximizes creative opportunities. That maximizes the amount of excitement for the fans, you know. And then with the doors open, you know, to across the hall to all these other companies and things like that, like it can only go up from here. And I think the plan from the get-go was always to, you know, turn this into what it is now and keep it, you know, going farther and further. And that's the page that we're all on, and we're all very, very excited and hungry, and really want to turn this into something much bigger than anyone thought it could be.
A couple of names you've mentioned a couple of times on this interview are Alex Coughlin and Clark Connors. What does it mean to have their camaraderie, and what's it been like seeing their success as well? Because like all three of you guys have really been like kind of like rising the ranks together, it seems mm-hmm. like.
Man, it's been, like I said, Clark was the first guy I wrestled in the dojo at my tryout, and we were just doing 5-minute, just go wrestle, no talk, no speaking, no talking. And from Alex was injured at my first tryout, but he was helping. It was cool because he was one of the dudes that like were doing like a CrossFit circuit. Luckily at the time, that was like my main mode of training. So I was like, oh, like day two, I was like, oh, this is my shit. Good. You know, so like I'm cruising through it, and he was like, you know, just being like the dude he is, and all, you know, whoever needs help, whatever. I remember like my first conversation with him was like during the workout, and he's like, you've done this before, haven't you? And I was like, yeah, this is the bullshit I like, you know? And he's put every 45 plate you can fit on a bar and pick it up a bunch of times guy, you know? And I like wall balls and shit. And you know, going from where we were to being stripped back down to zero together. And then, you know, especially Alex Clark and I had a few years of experience when we came in, and Alex was very green, like less than 10 matches, I would say. And now he's phenomenal, you know, and he's still nowhere near as good as he's going to be, you know? And so between those two, Clark, you know, Clark won that tournament in the last year, you know, and I think that's cool. Cause you know, I would like to think I set some sort of precedent for the LA dojo, and you know, being the top young lion and you know, things like that moving on, and everyone's, you know, gone further and beyond. And that so much to the point where like, I still, you know, like I said, in, you know, in recent interviews, it's like, I feel like I've been kind of playing catch up, and like, I've been a little stagnant compared to them, which is great though, you know, because having that team mentality, you know, like you got, if you don't fit in, you don't fit in. So the standard is greatness. You know, so it keeps me going there. And then the other one to mention is Gabriel Kidd. Between the three of those people are Gabe. You know, when I met Gabe, he came into the dojo in 2018, and it was just the three of us. And he came and visited for about 2 weeks right before Thanksgiving. And he, man, he was, again, tons of wrestling experience, great wrestler. But he, you know, as far as for what we do, the workouts, or even things like his flexibility, you know, like the certain types of roles we do, think like he wasn't up to par on that. And then he left, he went back home, and in like 6 months, he lost like 50 pounds, you know, because we didn't know him as well. So we kept up tabs, like followed each other on Instagram, whatever, you know, but I just remember seeing like, we'd be on tours or somewhere, and I'd like show the boys, or so Alex would be like, geez, you know, look at Gabe. We'd show Shibata-san, be like, man, this guy's fucking, he went out and did everything he needed to do to come in. And by the time he came in, he's been, you know, nothing but excelling. And so just having a team of guys around me where that's the standard, whether it's the work, you know, the work ethic or your output being that high and that good has been amazing for me because, you know, you, like I said, you, if you want to fit in, you got to be like the boys, and that's awesome. And I love it. And then on the other hand is like those guys, we've been attached to the hip for years now, you know, now it's cool because we're adults and we're like the normal guys, you know, where we fly in and we get to hang out. But before it was like, you know, all the young boy duties, loading the bus, doing the laundry, all the being up early in the, you know, 8 a.m. cleaning every day, things like that. And then when you are having those bad days in the dojo and you're going stir crazy because you're stuck in this little room with bunk beds and or, you're missing your family, you go through a breakup, and like those guys have been there for everything. And half the time they're right there when it happens because, you know, attached to the hip. But yeah, like, you know, Clark's like my road wife, you know, and Alex is like the best of all of us. Alex is like, the most clear thinker, go-to guy. Like he's like big dad vibes on that guy. You know? Like good. You know? Clark's like cool dad, you know, but yeah, like those guys, like that support system feels just as much at home to me, like the you know, my friends, is super cheesy, but like, you know, my boys are just as much home to me as when I'm here in Reno and I'm with, you know, my best friends that I've known for over 10 years, you know. So now instead of having, you know, when I'm 16 hours away, instead of having to worry about, you know, oh, if I can call one of my boys, like I have my guys here, and it's been, man, we've been through some deep shit together, you know, and thankfully not even personally. Like I've had less wrinkles with these guys in worse conditions, being stuck and attached to the hip every single day. Whereas like some of my friends down here, like 2 days in a row, like I love you, but like I also love my space. Like a very reserved person, to be honest, you know, it's two sides to me, obviously. But you know, like I don't know a lot of people I can spend that much time with. And you know, or like when I was on teams, like football practice, all that, and then you want to hang out, like, no, man, I want to go home and like sit down and like decompress, you know. And I just, it's, especially as hard as things have been at times for me personally, like being overseas and things like that for the first time, that first tour was 5.5 weeks long, that first G1, and thank God I had Clark. I mean, there was days where like I went through a breakup and my uncle had passed away. I got news about my uncle passing away. Like I went like in like the first hour of my day one day. And then we had a show in Hiroshima that night. And you know, it was just a lot, like a lot of stress and stuff like that. So then there was like, and you don't really have time to like process, like, you know, I didn't have time, no time to, you know, to cry anything out that morning or deal with stuff. It was like, I got in the ring with Okada for the first time that night. We had a six man, you know, so I was like, no, you gotta go work. And then so then I worked and then did all the young boy stuff, and you know, had that whole show after the match where you're still working, you're seconding, and then it wasn't until, you know, 11 p.m that night that I got to like sit somewhere and take my time, and Clark was right there next to me, you know, or on the train. I remember a specific train ride where I was having a real hard day, you know, and I didn't even notice him get up, but I was sitting behind him. It was a pretty empty bullet train, but a longer ride. And I was sitting there, you know, like sobbing a little bit, you know, like I said, my, you know, especially the thing with my uncle was having a real rough day. And then he did it like two or three times where he just walked by and just sat a beer on my tray, you know, like didn't say a word, maybe one time like patted me on the back, but every time it was like, you know, same thing. Like I got like a chuckle out of it. And then just like having him there, like doing that little thing, like that turned my whole day around. Like that first beer turned into like, then I was like letting my shit out and just like feeling whatever. And like, you know, this is, you know, like that, this is life. And I got my boy, like, and I don't even, if it wasn't for Clark being there, I guarantee this probably, if it wasn't for Clark being there present on that first tour, or if we hadn't clicked up the way we did, and then also done it a few times now for this specific store, but I got to give Rocky Romero credit too, because my contract ended the last night of the G1 that year, because it was a 1 year contract, and I didn't know if I could cut it, man. Like I didn't know, you know, being away from home was hard like that for that period of time. I'd never done it. Plus, it's a completely different experience as a young lion. And, you know, Rocky was someone who's like, man, he's like, this is the longest tour we do. None of the other ones reached nearly 6 weeks. You know, like, it gets easier, you know, stick it out. And then having Clark there, if it wasn't for that, like, I don't know if I would have resigned, because it probably would have seemed way too hard, you know, and I would have been alone on that whole, you know, that whole, I would have dealt with all that shit alone. So.
You just mentioned Alex, Clark, and Gabriel, and you guys call yourself the Big Four, and I assume that's a take on the four pillars. Like, where did this nickname come from?
It came from, just the four of us have just been, like, as far as the LA Dojo goes, like, that original class was Clark, Alex, and I, and then Gabe was, like, this good in between, came in. Gabe was ringside for the whole Young Lion Cup 2019 when I won. He's been on the team, and he just, when he finally got to go get in the ring and kill it and all that stuff, you know, we were stuck in the States and he was in Japan. So it's always been, you know, in our mind, like, we're the guys in our class, in our generation, because we have that whole, we have a pretty big group of young lions, which is rare to be able to do that tournament. And yeah, man, we just believe that we're the fucking guys. And, you know, and you can't tell us otherwise. Not even so much to like the pillar, you know, it's just there's four of us, and we didn't want to be, you know, of course, you get the horsemen, things like that. And the name comes from a spin on college football, something Clark and I came up with on a brainstorm. It's like, oh, might have been the first or second week of college football this year. Sat at a bar and just, you know, watched a bunch of football, talked wrestling. But, you know, just like the big conferences. You got the Big 12, the Big 10, and we're the Big Four, you know. So it's – and those are the – aside from, like, the SEC, you know, you have all these conferences. But, like, everyone knows Big 12 football, you know, the Big 10, you know, those things. So we think, you know, in my mind, my description of it would be that – you know, you could line up any of your four guys from anywhere, you know, but we have that, you know, we're Shibata guys, we're LA Dojo, we're New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, like what we've done to earn our stamps and our stripes is far different than anything anyone else has done, you know. So you have your four, you can have your pillars over there, you can call yourself whatever you want, but we're the Big Four, we're it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
It's all that, you know, for us, this is, you know, this is our, it's, or I'll speak for me, you know, this is my art. This is my career. This is my sport. You know, but you know, we're entertainers and I'm a rock star. You know, I always thought, you know, maybe, you know, growing up, you know, you want to be MJ, you want to be Kobe, guys like that. But I look at, like, maybe the way I played basketball growing up, who I am now as a person, as a wrestler. Trust me, like it took balls to walk in that, you know, in or out of that New Japan locker room with, you know, what most people would assume, you know, my native earrings and you know, my dangly earrings and the jewelry and things like that, you know. But like I think I'm much more Terrell Owens and Dennis Rodman than MJ or Kobe, you know, and I'm very much okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You had mentioned, you know, that you were on, like, the indie scene prior to going to the dojo, and I know you do a lot of stuff on the West Coast. I just wanted to get your thoughts on working West Coast Pro, because I love that promotion, and and I mean, I just wanted to know what it was like working out there.
Man, it was, to be honest, it was amazing. It was the first group of people that got to see me in my brand new costume and everything long after I had been in it. Was that San Francisco crowd. And that's the same crowd. I remember going to that first show, just the reception I get when I go out there. Cause the Bay was like my home. All Pro Wrestling, Marcus Mack gave, you know, he gave me a run with that internet title. I mean, I won it at the Cow Palace, and then I had it for about 7 months in that time. You know, I wrestled, he fed me the fly-ins, and then I got to wrestle Jacob Fatu at the Cow Palace. I lost the title there, you know, in front of a few thousand people. I got to wrestle twice in the Cow Palace in front of thousands. Like, San Francisco's my home. So then, having not been there since 2018 and then getting the reception I did. But I remember as soon as I walked out, just I recognized every fan. Like, they are all the same people that have been watching me wrestle since 2016 when I was a heel, and they were booing me, not because I was a good heel, because I was a year and a half in the business. You know, I had to earn the good heel reactions from them, and they made me earn it, and now I have it, and that's my home, man. It's been amazing. And what they're doing now, especially because when I came up in 2015, you know, being trained by the Reno Scum and being in the California territory, I remember September 2015, I went to my first WWE tryout, and I remember this one was a little more wrestler heavy. I had quite a few wrestlers, if I recall. I think the second one was the one that had more of like the models and athlete, you know, ex-athletes and things like that. But I remember just being so salty because the other wrestlers, when they, you know, we do our stuff, and I like to think I'm pretty good and showed a lot of promise. So they, you know, the other workers would ask me, like, where are you from, man? Where'd you train out of? Where do you wrestle? I'm like, and I couldn't say Reno because no one, you know, it's not like there's no shows or anything out here. So it's like, I wrestle, you know, West Coast, Northern California. And like the look of disgust on their face, like, California, like, where do you wrestle in California? You know, like that. I took that as an insult. You know, I came back home, and in 2017, it was the same thing. They were still kind of, you know, APW had been doing good stuff, but I think the biggest flaw with them was like they weren't streaming, and they weren't putting, like, there's a whole ton of library stuff that's just not on the internet. And in pro wrestling, especially indie wrestling, if that's the case, it might as well have not happened at all. You know, but with West Coast consistently booking these crazy shit, like, that's one of the best indie promotions in the country now, which means the world, essentially, you know. So for California, let alone Northern California, to have that, and to see the younger guys in NorCal, they're all, you know, the opportunities they're getting there. Now there's a school there too. So for me, like, I have a ton of pride in the West Coast, and especially NorCal. You know, every shoddy little place I wrestled in, you know, like that's I mean, and all the territories have that, you know, but it's important for us, you know, outside of LA, to have especially like some sort of a home base, because now it is becoming like, you know, big territory. You have Defy up north, San Francisco's that legitimate middle ground like it used to be. If we can get back to running major shows at the Cow Palace collectively the way they do, you know, I imagine like Prestige, GCW is doing that LA Fights thing. You have to fight, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to make that, you know, a big thing again. I think it's so cool because, you know, that's one of those things that, like, I, not as much anymore, and I don't have to. It's cool because we have, you know, Brody King, Jake Atlas, Jungle Boy, Jacob Fati, you know, everyone, all of the guys from my class, we've all like branched out. We've kind of proven, you know, we have enough proof that, like, yeah, there's good wrestling out here. And then now the scene's thriving bigger than it was when we were active in it. I mean, it's only good, because it used to be something I used to, you know, whether it be just the West Coast wrestling, all that, because, you know, I took a lot of pride in that, because, you know, yeah, I might have wrestled Jeff Cobb in front of like 8 people in Santa Cruz in 2016, but, you know, there was still, you know, 3 other people on that card that I know were going to go off and do things, and Jeff and I are doing pretty good, I would say. You know, like, but yeah, it was something that I was always so salty about, it because there was just, there was no love for the West Coast out here, you know. And I felt like I remember I wanted to run angles, like I would talk to Fatu after shows and think of these creative things. And this was like, indie wrestling was much less like cooperative at the time as well, but I was like, man, we need to show up somewhere on the East Coast, on some.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, what is the first thing that you would do? Read a book, take a nap, play some video games, do something for a friend, volunteer. A lot of us spend our lives wishing that we had more time. But the question is, time for what? And if it was unlimited, how would you go about using it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important for you and to make it a priority. And therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy is so valuable. It's gotten me through some tough times, really helped me reflect on things that are important, specifically with BetterHelp. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be the convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. This is so beneficial when you've got that crammed schedule and you can't even imagine finding that extra hour. You can do it all from home. Fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Fightful today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Fightful. It's so flexible and it can help you find that social sweet spot with BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/Fightful.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like, you ain't got no love for Death Row Records shit. Like, you know, right. Like, we, I was like, because I just know there's a story there. That's, if you ask me, I think it's easy money. That's an easy invasion, you know? That's good business, if you ask me. Although, I will say this, I have no interest in fucking booking or running or doing anything other than showing up to work and wrestling.
Hey, I think it's also easy
if
money.
If someone hears this and takes this idea, just give me some credit. Just give me like a little bit of love, and I'm
happy. Send the royalty check. It'll be whatever, yeah. Whatever they get off the angle.
Just give this interview a shout out, and like that's good enough for me because I don't have it with me. Shout out to everybody who tries to do anything in the business aspect of this pro wrestling. I mean, a lot of you guys shouldn't be. But, you know, if it wasn't for you, it wasn't going to be me doing it. So
I do think that's easy money. I think that'd be a great idea. Another great idea that I think should happen is, you know, Jacob Fatu just recently beat AJ Gray for that West Coast Pro Championship. And I think you and Fatu would be a pretty banger matchup over there. I'm just saying, for that title.
I'm 0-2 and I need to get one back. And I know if I can get one back, I'm tenfold. You know, I've always been good. I would like to think good enough, whatever. But you know, the guy that Fatu is standing across the ring from now is much different than the guy that he stood across the ring from and beat before. You know, because now I'll wrestle Suzuki every day if you want me to. Is my body gonna like it? Am I gonna be enthusiastic? No, I'm not gonna be enthusiastic about it. But this is what we do. You know, this is. We had it beaten into us for well over a year, 6 days a week. You know, we're fucking killers in this dojo. So, you know, I'm ready to stand and bang with a guy like that. Whereas before, you know, maybe it was only, you know, it was me being faster, more athletic. You know, maybe not more athletic because he does all kinds of crazy shit as well. But you know, like I don't have to game plan as much. You know, now I can go out and fight. So. If he's got that strap and there's opportunities there, because I'm sure the boys, I'm sure Scott, people will hear this. So, you know, I'm only an hour long flight away. So
there you go.
You mentioned you see yourself as like Rodman, Terrell Owens, two Hall of Famers, by the way, two Hall of Famers. And maybe not so much Jordan Kobe. You've shared the ring with guys who were considered Jordan, Kobe, and like Tanahashi and Okada. Was there a moment where you stepped in the ring, whether it was them or somebody else, maybe it was Suzuki, where you were in the ring, you're in the ring with one of these guys, and they hit the shit out of you, or just before they even hit you, it was like, wow, like I'm really in the ring with one of these guys.
There's there's one clip I can think of. Everything else is all the matches from the G1, they were very, like I said, the person I was as a young lion. Like we went to Japan and we wrestled Shota, Ren, Tanahashi, it was Kenta, Clark, and I. And going in there, that was like real, like we can't go out here and get handled, because then we're going to come back to Shibata-san and we're going to get handled again. Like, we got, you know, we, so everything was like, if you show weakness, if you go out there and you bitch out, you know, any of that, if you show any of that, anything other than that fire, you know, so it was hard to break that. But if it wasn't for commentary mentioned it, but there's a six man in there, and Okada gets tagged in, Clark tags me in, and I do the normal, you know, I spring over the ropes, ready to go, but you can see me, I take this breath, and there's this look on my face that was much, much different than before. And I want to say commentary pointed out, because I didn't notice it at the time, but you can see 100%. I jump over and I'm here, and my face turns from like the scowl to like, you know, like you can see me take a deep breath, and you can see me realizing, you know, the situation. And like you said, there's, you know, guys like that, Okada, Tanahashi, you know, this once in a lifetime, you know, they are the, you know, the MJs of the Kobes of this sport. And then, you know, knowing, especially being a guy in the black trunks on the bottom of the pyramid, the food chain, and doing that, that those first times, I would say with each of them was a very big, like, all right, let's see how good you are, you know, because anything that I'm lacking, you know, because they're this good. So anything that I'm lacking in between, it's that difference is going to be noticeable. So I think at that point, my biggest thing was just make sure that whatever points in between are, you know, make as minimal as possible. But now, you know, it's different. Like I said, I'm back to being hungry like I was, but it's coming from a very grounded place, and it's not that hyper focus pissing, you know, like I'm, because I think just with my confidence, you know, like I know who I am, I know what I can do, and I know what I need to do. So whether it be Okada, Tanahashi, or especially this Sunday with the Walking Weapon, you know, like I'm at the point where I got to start getting wins in these big performances. They're good, you know, good, you know, fighting well is good, but just like any other sport, you know, if you don't win fights in that cage, entertaining or not, you can, you know, you only have a certain amount of entertaining matches that you're going to get. And if you're not winning, you know, shit, if you're not winning, you're not winning. That's, I mean, yeah. Simple as that, right? You know, like,
yeah, is there anybody that you would, and you could name a few, you might have just named them as well, but that you would consider to be like the best people you've been in the ring with, or someone that like you just like, it just hits you like, like I remember years ago hearing a CM Punk interview where he was like, man, I knew I was pretty good, and then I wrestled Eddie Guerrero and I was like, man, I don't know anything. Like, well, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like, yeah. something like that, where you're like, damn, there's like just serious levels to what we do here, and like this guy's really proven it.
The first time that I felt that in my career the biggest way was, it was 2016, and I got to wrestle my trainer, Adam Thornstow, one of my trainers from Reno Scum. And aside from them, I mean this all of my chest and all of my heart, it's one of the greatest tag teams in the world. They have been for a very long time. And Adam, they're both as singles wrestlers, have yet to wrestle Luster, and that needs to happen eventually. But Adam, that was the first, like, you know, and I've wrestled guys like Okada and Tanahashi, maybe not singles, but I've touched every, you know, I've wrestled everybody. I've fought everybody. And to me, like that, this, whether it be the smooth, everything, Adam's just as good as everybody that I get in the ring with right now, everybody I've been in the ring with. And then there's, you know, those goat levels, you know, Tana and Okada, like you can feel that, but I feel that every time I get in the ring with that, anybody on this company. And it's like, it's tough, man. Like I'm, you know, this is the political answer, but like, I'm tough on these questions, because like everybody's so
of course,
good, you know, like you, sure, get, or at least I would say like you get to a certain level, you know, and I'd like to think that I'm at that level, you know, we're up in the majors here, but like everybody's so fucking good, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, and that's what I want too. Like I would hope, you know, I want to get in the ring with another athlete that I've never touched before and be like, fuck, that guy was good, you know, like, and then, cause you're going to, even if you might feel matched or whatever on the, the level, like I always learn. Like I always learn something and come out better on that end. But yeah, I work for New Japan. Like I'm so,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, sure.
I mean, there's everyone I touch, you know, it's world-class. So
you've shared the ring with Rocky Romero, who I think is one of the more underrated performers, but on the subject of Rocky, is there anybody he doesn't know?
I don't think so, man. Cause like, even we were, he does the sliced bread. And I was telling him that one of El Chupacabras, one of the guys out, he does hood slam, a lot of NorCal stuff. He's been around since the Scum been around. He's somewhat like one of my mentors, my early days. He was in there a good handful of times. And I told him that, whenever he does a sliced bread, it reminds me of Chupi, because that was like the first person I saw do it. But apparently they had both gotten it from like the same, I can't remember who right now off the top of it, but they both pretty much stole it from like the same mutual friend, I guess, or like saw it and like said they were gonna start doing it. But yeah, like Rocky knows Scum. Rocky knows, I mean, he's the perfect guy to have as like our I don't know, is concierge, is that the word? Is that, am I using it?
Liaison, maybe?
Liaison.
Yeah, he knows everybody in every company. I feel like if you need anything, you just go to Rocky, yeah, like, hey, can you get me in touch with this person? And Rocky's like, yeah, sure, here's their home address and everything.
That's almost concierge, kind of.
Because of all of, yeah, kind of.
Like, he gets you, yeah, you ask him, like, hey, where do I find the good wrestlers that can help me? Oh, I'll tell you where they are, yeah.
He's definitely, it seems like, he's becoming that guy out like in his, cause he's got so many, he's doing so many things. You know, he's got his hands in a lot of pots. So like in like entertainment and all the other, like the media stuff he's doing, like I'm sure by now, like if I wanted an agent or something, I'm sure he's one of the guys, like he's the first guy I would go to. Or
he's like, doing NFTs and stuff now. Is he has an animated series. Like,
yeah, he's, you know, he's a big Web 3 guy. Rock. Yeah. That's, I don't know anything about
it. I don't understand any of it.
Yeah. But yeah, buy his pictures online and you can own them.
It's 7 degrees of separation of Rocky Romero is what this is.
Yeah.
You know, we talked a bit today about your three dudes, Coughlin, Connors, and Kid. And is there anyone else you want to give a shout out to? Like maybe someone that you're seeing like kind of on the come up that maybe is kind of flying under the radar a little bit, just some names out there that maybe some people should be looking out for.
Robert Martyr. Is that how you say
it? Yeah. I like him Martyr, a lot. That, yep. Martyr. Yeah. Yeah. He's like a Garcia protege.
Yeah. I've seen a few things and was already following him. Saw some good stuff, whatever. But then he wrestled Vinny Massaro this last week. So West Coast Pro again, just this last weekend, forget the name of the show. The whole show is sick, but yeah, go watch that. Him and Vinny was fucking sick. And then I watched his match the next night, the Prestige match against a really good dude, bald, has the earrings in Dark Order.
Is it Preston? Was it Alan Angels?
I want to say, yeah, he was really, really, it was at Prestige, really awesome match. But Robert, it's, I don't watch a whole ton of wrestling outside of, you know, game planning and stuff like that. I, you know, study my opponents, but very, very much on my me time when I'm outside of work. But yeah, I checked out his Prestige match because the Vinny match was good. And so yeah, that kid's sick. I didn't know he was as young as he was. I think he just turned 21 or something like that. So
yeah. Yeah,
nice. I started when I was 25, so Robert Martyr's sick, man. I really like his style and his he's a wrestler, you know.
Yeah, he won a pretty prestigious tournament in the South last year, the Future Showcase out of Chattanooga, that like affiliated with the SCI in Action and stuff. A lot of kind of the up and coming talent from the Southeast, especially.
Cool.
So he's been doing really good. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, so I'm really tapped into like the Southeast.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And yeah, the shows you're referring to, if anyone wants to check them out and you want to know more about Martyr, it was the West Coast Pro and Prestige joint shows. They did Savage Mode. That's where he fought Massaro. And it was Alan Angels, as real as it gets. So if you want to check that out. Yeah, shout out Robert Martyr.
And they're two very different matches, which was awesome to see. But yeah, both of them were bangers. So go check them out.
I want to move away from wrestling because I stalked your timeline and I saw you were watching The Bachelor, and I would just like to know why.
Oh, so, well, I mean, I guess my excuse isn't going to sound much better than normal. So, I live in a duplex, and one of my good friends, Kelly, owns my house, but she's a travel nurse and lives in San Francisco. So I upstairs in the house is a buddy of mine. I have the whole downstairs apartment to myself, and she was in town, and we every now and then we do girls night and we do face masks and it's a Cameron Diaz movie, like a 2002 rom-com. It was fucking funny. It was good. It's really good. The Sweetest Thing.
Oh, that's actually a very good movie.
But I didn't know that it was like over the top and like, you know, I didn't know it was
just right.
I didn't know it was like a parody of itself as well. So I loved, like, I thought it was awesome. But so yeah, I wasn't watching The Bachelor. I went upstairs to have a girls' night and watch a chick flick, and my buddy was finishing The Bachelor. We watched that last like 30 minutes, and I can't believe it's real life. Like, I can't believe this is a real thing that you do. And this girl literally stormed out. It was kind of tight. I mean, shout out to Holmes. I mean, his life sounds stressful, but you know, it's definitely not the way to be. But so one girl just, it was like the final three. One girl just left because she's like, he had hooked up with two of the three. So she's like, look, I'm out. And then it's down to two. And then he went to give one a rose, and she's like, no, fuck that, I'm out too. And then the third one was like, wait, so does that mean I won? Like, what happened? And then he went out and talked to the second one that left. Like, yeah, look, I'm sorry that, like, I hooked up with them, whatever. Like, I really love you too, essentially. And then the first thing she said, she's like, look, I'm not in the business of like competing for love. I'm like, you are strictly in the business.
You're on The Bachelor. It's literally your job right now.
And I don't know, man. I mean, not to say that like I'm this enlightened dude by any means, but I see stuff like that, and I mean, it's just so, I think it's so bad for just our society. You know, like, it's not good for our culture. Things like The Bachelor and the dating shows. But yeah, it's because like I watch it, it just seems so, like, I feel like I'm like a Simpsons character, and this is what like you would see on the TV. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, hey, here's some stupid ass screwed up show that, you know, and like, but it's, here we are, you know, like, it's, I don't do reality TV as much as I used to, man. I think too much about this shit. So then I'm sitting there just like baffled. Like, this is,
that's when you just gotta like turn your brain off. Cause I agree. Like, it's terrible for like society. Like, how can people like be like this and act like this? But if you just watch it and realize it's just all trash and just be like, man, I'm so glad I'm not doing that. And I'm not going through that. I don't have to deal with people like that. It's just tremendous. Like, turn your brain off.
Or like the other bad one. I mean, now that we're on to bitching about our culture and all this, like the podcast, you know, and this kills me too. Like, you know, being the alpha wolf and all that's like, you know, every alpha podcast is like just the worst, most like, it's just these embarrassing takes on women and men in society, you know, like, and like, dog, like, I wear women's jeans, dog, and women, you know, I wear hoop earrings. Like, this isn't, you know, the alpha wolf, Carl Fred, this isn't some macho bullshit. Like, I'm a sensitive creature.
You just said you were doing face masks. Like, you have girls night.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Masks. Like, yeah, this, like, this isn't like some macho shit. But then, like, you know, you see, like, whether it be TikTok or YouTube, or there's like the Fresh and Fit podcast. Like, that's the one that, like, where you said just tune out. You know, like, you watch the dating show, you tune out, and just like realize, like, thank God I'm not in, because it is like specific circle. You know, certain types of people.
Yeah.
That would, you know, but like, the Fresh and Fit podcast, like, it's just this wildly, wildly fucking misogynistic takes on things, you know, but they're in Miami, and they always have like a panel of women on the show, guests, you know, it's pretty much talking like specific, like, club crap, you know, I always have to tell myself, because I'm like, no, these are the fucking worst takes. But then I'm like, okay, well, you're also like, you're speaking of like this club crowd, and like, you know, like, the values are much different, you know, like, on that. And so, like, I'm like, I have to separate. I'm like, you know what? I don't even live in that world. It's like, I don't I don't come across people like that. So like, that's not the, like the dating world that I have to deal with. So I can step back and do that. But I also, it's just, I'm much better off because I can't, like, I can't enjoy, I can't turn my brain off to enjoy stuff. Like I would have never watched that 30 minutes of The Bachelor if I didn't have to. And then my friend Kelly did even ask, she wanted to watch like the recap episode. She was like, oh, do you want to just watch this? Like, no, I want to watch a fucking movie. I don't want to watch this. Get these people off my screen.
Yeah, that's so funny. I'm the same way as you, Carl, where like when I watch that kind of stuff, I'm just overanalyzing it so much. Where I'm like, why are the people like this? Why do people want to be people? Why do they want to be like the people that they're seeing here? And it sends like this weird message to society of like, you want to strive. Like, this is making it. Like, what you're seeing on TV. So you want to be like these people. Yeah, and it's like, no, you don't.
And like, and it stresses me. Like, for all the, just for the reasons, like I said, I mean, I've become much more reserved over the past 2 years. Like, I didn't understand how many followers I had on Twitter after being to, you know, being to Japan like I had, but I had like 10,000. I didn't know it was going to be like, I didn't know that was a lot, you know, but like I deleted that Twitter because I was just, you know, it was a mental health, you need the break. And that's why I still, you know, I'm very limited. And when I, you know, it's either posting just as the dude more, you know, more often than not. And then I plug my wrestling and I interact with my wrestling fans and that's it, you know, like nothing over the top. But then it is like I see, and I like, I have a niece that's a sophomore in high school now, you know, and I've cut little cousins that are, you know, got they're in eighth grade and they're going to be playing football, freshmen, you know, little freshman boys next year. And I just, you know, I think about all the stuff like that we think is important or what, you know, or like what to aspire to, and it's just like it bums me out because a lot of it just seems like it, you know, it's like fame for, or, you know, for, or just followers. A lot of like people want followers, but then, you know, like there's no end game behind it other than like, that means people like me maybe, you know? Wow. Yeah. Or like,
yeah.
I don't know, just the more, and I used to, you know, put much more stock into things like that. Like if, you know, 2 years ago, knowing that I had 10,000 followers and now only have like 4, like that would have been like, fuck, you know, I would have been something that I'm like, oh, got to get back to 10. Like for what? For fucking what? You know, like, of course, if I have more followers, that's good. That's better for my, you know, my business. That's good. I want, you know, I'm not saying don't follow me. I am saying don't add me on Facebook, but like that shouldn't be, you know, like that will come with the work, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And that's like the least, I don't know, none of my heroes had to do that shit. And if I'm, you know, just as good as any other, you know, entertainer or attraction or athlete, like I don't need to do that to sell tickets. So, you know, as long as, you know, I'm worried about my work and you know, I'll sell my fight here. Like I'll sit and do interviews all day long. I've no problem with the social interaction and things like that. But yeah, just the social media. And then I think recognizing, like, again, because maybe it pulled those negative like outlooks out of me, you know, where like I was more, you know, putting much more weight into it than I should have. And now I just think very differently. I'm also, you know, I turn 32 in July. You know, I'm a much different person than the kid that signed with New Japan in 2018.
And you know, the clout chasing, as people want to call it, you make a good point. You brought up your relatives, like they're doing this, they're doing this. Like some of them might care, but for me personally, it's like, all right, you have all these followers and stuff, and then I've got essentially stepkids, and like they don't care about any of that. They just want to play like cards with me. And it's like those are the moments where you realize, like, all right, it doesn't matter how many followers you have, like these are the moments that are actually important in life. Is like what's going on right here, of playing cards with the kid or going to your niece or nephew's like football game, something like that. It's like they don't care about all this clout chasing and stuff. Like you got to value those moments.
And then, and I think of it the same way as, like, you know, like in my little bubble, like I'm from a tiny, tiny little town. So like, it's not like tiny, we have one stoplight and like one of the oldest and only, like one of the only still like functioning, round, like the architecture is around courthouse, and it's like dead center in the middle of town, you know, very, very, very old little town. And so like, I'm probably the most famous person to ever come out of my town, like in my little bubble, you know, or like even like being here in Reno, like, you know, the more time goes past, like I'm like becoming the more, you know, in my own right, somewhat, you know, the famous friend. And like my, you know, my niece sees all that stuff. You know, she follows me on Instagram, and my nephews and my cousins see all that stuff. So like, just taking that into account, you know? So if I look like I'm living and breathing for it, like what example does that show them? And then I can't imagine right. how hard, like I'm so, thank God that I think I was probably 16 when I first got MySpace. You know, I didn't have Facebook until I was in college. Like, so I had that first half of my year or of my life where I was, you know, just, I didn't have to work because social media and all the bullshit that these kids have to go through, you know, like cyberbullying, all that shit's real, because especially when you're a kid, like your social life is your whole life. That's all you have, you know, that you have home, school, and your social life. So like those apps and all the stuff that they come across, like, you know, like it's going to affect them. I growing up reading wrestling magazines all the time affected me. You know what I mean? Like that's a part of your diet, the stuff that you know, you're scrolling, that's the stuff that you're feeding yourself. So I, again, not to say that I'm some enlightened human being by any stretch of the imagination, but like, I just really, in the last year and a half, 2 years, try to be more conscious about like the message I'm sending to like my family, my friends, who, you know, might, you know, just really like the Kardashians and really, you know, and I'm like, man, like don't look up to those people, you know, like, you know, there's look up to your friends, you know?
Yeah. So for what it's worth, I'm 33. Jeremy, you're the same, right? You're right around our age.
Yeah. So we
all have that same experience of like life before social media, and then like it all hitting us right around like the end of high school, the beginning of college. And, that all said, Carl Fredericks underscore on Twitter is where you can find Carl Fredericks. Yeah. But and I was so confused today because I was like, I know I follow him on Twitter, and then I didn't. Yeah. And I was like, oh, you deleted the last Twitter. I was so confused.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I that's even worse. I was like, I had the only. I fucked. I should have just muted it. I should have just. But that's how I was so. But I mean, dude, summer 2020 was not a good space for fucking wrestling Twitter or just life and just anything in general. And then, you know, when shit hit the fan with wrestling, and then it was like, nah, you know, nope.
That's not a bad idea, by the way. I think a lot more people should unplug from social media, at least for like some times, you know, like you just take some time off. And like, I know everyone's joke is always like, go touch grass, but like, that's like true. Like it's amazing how, and also how different people act on social media versus in real life. I've met so many people in real life that were so much more like calm and reserved and just like cool people. But like on Twitter, they were like angry and complaining about everything. And it's like almost like two different people. And it kind of goes along with what you were saying, just all the weird like pressures of social media and like the bullying and like looking up to the Kardashians and stuff like that. And it's just like, yeah, it's strange. We're in like a really weird position at our age because we had like the before times and like the current times, and we got to be like hip enough to like ride the wave of the future too, so we don't get left behind, you know? So we got to kind of deal with this stuff too, but it's a weird balance.
And it affects you, man. I can't imagine if I had grown up with this my entire life, like, isn't that a Black Mirror episode as well? Like your social score, you know, that type of thing. Like that concept's like, that's a real, you know, that blue check is a status symbol. Like, I understand that. I recognize that, but I don't fucking care. If I have like a you know, I'm down. I want one. Cool. But like, I don't like, you know, a friend of mine had recently been talking about it, you know, in that sense, but then had, you know, the way that they like the amount of, stock they put into it was like, well, people aren't going to take so-and-so seriously unless, you know, blue check. And I'm like, well, that's where I check. I'm like, that's where I like that. But again, like that took me, I had to find my ground and my perspective with all of this. And that was with the wrestling too, you know, going fucking crazy balls, you know, like it started to wear on me, and I'm happier, healthier, wrestling just fine, I would say, you know, but it's all of that extra stuff that comes with our business is like the stuff that I think where people have those struggles is you got to figure out who you are in the space, and who you can be, because, you know, I can talk all the shit. I can do, you know, I can get on there and, you know, get that momentum, the extra, all the stuff. Would it be better or could it be beneficial if I did it? Of course. But the way it would affect me here, you know, not worth it. So like, that's, I think today, like, that's something, and I see people mention on Twitter too. I think it's a great idea. That should be a part of like your wrestling training is your, you know, whether it be how to handle yourself in the business or just to like warn people about, you know, all the, like the pressures, whether it comes to social media and things like that. Cause not only just searching all those other things, like it becomes very easy to start comparing yourself to others or, you know, get down on yourself and things like that. And end of the day, man, like your whole journey and all this, you know, everybody's timelines, roads, you know, it would be this massive, crazy, that it's this massive, crazy living, breathing thing. So, you know, and it's hard for us not to think linear. Like, I started here, I should be here. And that's, you know, that's not how anything works. So then when you see all of this happening over here, and maybe you read too much negative shit online already, so you're in a bad headspace, or maybe you went and found a bad comment, so you're in a bad headspace, then you're seeing good stuff other people are doing, you know. And if you're not doing these things with your feet on the ground and with, you know, your perspective, being able to, you know, separate the two, you know, and stay on one side of the curtain while peeking through or something, like, I think, you know, it's for some, like, it could be a slippery slope. Or just, you know, like I said, that's why I don't do it. Like, if that was me, like, if I spent, like, my DMs are full on everything. And that's my friends, my family, like, on Instagram, Twitter. Like, unless it's business and I got to get to it now, like, I check my phone. If I have to post, I post real quick and I leave it, because if I stay too long and see something I don't like, that's the rule now. It's like, if I see one thing that makes me go, that's probably a me problem, because this is just my opinion on whatever it is, you know? So it's like, well, why would I sit here and digest a bunch of shit that makes me go, you know? So like, the first negative, first thing I see that I don't like, whether it's my fault, you know, whether it's on me or the content, I'm like, sometimes I get like 3 minutes in, I'm like, oh, that was a good 3 minutes. And sometimes it's one swipe, I'm like, fuck, you know, but that's the internet. That's the world we live in now, huh?
My last one here for you, Carl, and it is, what is the coolest thing you have in your room?
I like this, like, has become a thing for us.
Yeah, now people are like, have to like get up. Sometimes it's like right behind them. Sometimes they got to get up and get something. There we go. Okay, what, you're gonna have to explain this.
This is Annabelle. It's my Annabelle doll.
Oh, okay.
She sits right next to my bed where I sleep. I love the, if you've seen the Conjuring movies or any of this, you know, the warning, positively do not open. My favorite thing is the door doesn't
shut. It doesn't shut at all.
And then I think the coolest detail, or did I lose it already? Yeah, I must have. I used to have, it came with at least the little note that said, come find me, like the hide and seek note that like the dad and her were playing in the beginning. But yeah, my brother-in-law got me this for Christmas last year. Yeah. My room pretty much has, I've got the only, like, I don't have a lot of objects. Like, I don't own stuff. So like, if I wanted to move tomorrow, like, I could just sell my bed, just throw my clothes in my car. I have this, a few pop dolls, a guitar, and my DJ gear, my laptop. So like, that's it. This is like one of the only like things I own, I guess. Definitely the coolest in my book.
Very cool.
That is pretty sweet.
Very cool. I always end on this question. It's the most generic wrestling question ever, but I'm always genuinely interested to hear the answer. As a wrestling fan, what is your favorite match of all time?
I was so fucking convinced that Jeff Hardy was going to pull that belt down when he wrestled the Undertaker. And like, be like that age. I was like 12. And I mean, that was such a good time. Like, I remember like Eric Bischoff came back on my birthday. Like, my birthday was a Monday. And I remember like sitting like that time was like, so like, I remember those Monday nights, like those episodes with Raw and SmackDown more than I do the everything leading up to like WrestleMania 17, I would say. I personally, I was 10, give me a break, and I was a WCW guy. So like,
same.
So the Invasion was fucking sick as far as I was. I thought the Invasion was cool. Like, cause at least like all the, cause I had been watching WCW until the ship sank. So like Stasiak, O'Hare, Kent, like I knew all those guys. So at least they were like, I recognized them. Like it was cool to me. So I remember all, and then again, at the age of 12, I was dead certain. I was like, I like trying to tell my parents, like we need, I need to see Survivor Series. Like there might not be a WWF tomorrow, mom. Like this is serious shit. But that, like, I was so convinced that Jeff Hardy was going to win the strap that night. Like, and I was like genuine. I had been excited for plenty of matches, you know. But like, I remember, I think that was the first time that like any type of hope that when it got pulled away, like genuinely made me sad. I was like, fuck, because at that point I was old enough to know they fucking got me. I was like. Like, you know, because I was like, this is it. It's finally happening. Tonight's the night. It's going to be the best night of my life. And it never happened.
Man, I feel you, too. I was a WCW kid. So, like, I was familiar with all these guys, like, above average Mike Sanders and all these dudes. Like, yeah. they were the ones who came over. So, like, I was having a good time because they were my guys from WCW. I was a big Billy Kidman fan. Bro.
And that was, like, that was after he had, you know, he came off of those championship runs. Like, and I was all the way here for Booker T with like, when that thing happened, you know, cause like Harlem Heat was always the coolest. So like, that was, yeah, there was more than enough for me, but, and then I didn't think until, you know, you look back, you watch any of the documentaries. And then of course they do name 10 other major superstars that weren't present at all. And like, yeah, well, okay, maybe that would have been better, but you know.
Yeah.
Carl, let the people know where they can find you at. Not Facebook. Nobody follow Carl on Facebook.
I mean, you can find me on Facebook, but it would be a lot cooler if you didn't. Twitter and Instagram are CarlFredericks_. And TikTok as well. That's going to be like mostly music content. That ball's getting rolling soon. But yeah, follow me on TikTok. I might fuck around, and one day if I like the internet enough, I'll on that day in that moment you might see a dance or two. Probably not. Hopefully not. But yeah, I think those are the big three. Carl Fredericks of the big four.
Carl is in action this Saturday, or this Sunday, in Tampa against Josh Alexander. It'll air at a later date on New Japan Strong, which is on New Japan World, 8 o'clock Saturdays. Carl, thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it. Yeah, and good luck against Josh Alexander on Sunday.
Thank you.
Hope you guys are enjoying this interview that Steven and Jeremy are doing with Carl Fredericks. Man, New Japan was put in a unique position due to the pandemic, and it effectively forced a brand split. And it forced some more content by the way of New Japan Strong. But no matter where you are, Japan, U.S., NordVPN.com/Fightful has you covered. Now they've got you covered with that threat protection. Free with that Fightful code, in addition to 1 month free, 73% off in the U.S., and threat protection helps you with malware, blocks online trackers, and blocks annoying pop-up ads. Not only that, it avoids geo-blocking, it avoids price discrimination, all that stuff, and it works on all your devices, phone, tablet, PC, laptop, your TV even, all over the place. NordVPN.com/Fightful has you covered. Change your virtual location with just one click. Thanks to NordVPN.com/Fightful. I use this every single day. You get a huge discount. You can buy pay-per-views from services overseas that are way cheaper than here domestically. You'll end up saving money when you subscribe to NordVPN.com/Fightful.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.